When supporting a loved one with feeding differences, it's easy to feel like you are alone. At Feeding Matters, our hope is for you to find the community, resources, and support that you need. Through our Power of Two parent-to-parent mentoring program, parents in need of support are matched with one of our volunteer family coaches who have lived experience with their own child and can offer emotional support, resources, and guidance to lessen the isolation that families face with pediatric feeding disorder, or PFD, as well as avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID. Families can request a one-time phone call or a three-month or six-month match by filling out the request form on our website. A family coach will make contact via email first, and then by phone or text message, typically within 2 to 3 days. For more information, please contact us at 623-242-5234, extension 306, or email at info@feedingmatters.org. You are not alone.
Presented by Feeding Matters, with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom. Feeding does matter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Feeding Does Matter. I'm Jacqueline Peterson, CEO of Feeding Matters.
Hi, and I'm Haley Estrom. I'm an associate professor in the School of Nursing at UNC Wilmington. How are you doing today, Jacqueline?
I am doing pretty well. It's closing in on the week, so it always feels like both just a little bit of a lot. So it feels like the end of the week is going, and that seems to be how our guests were feeling too. So yeah. How are you doing?
I'm well, and it's always exciting to have guests.
Yes, for sure. And so today we've got the chairs of our Shannon Goldwater Summit for Change, and I'll let them share a little bit about themselves and about the summit in general. But we have been doing this summit for a while, and it really is an homage to how parents and providers can work together. And so they did a great job with this last year and have so many ideas for what the future looks like. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Daria Gledhill and Ruth Bork. So maybe let's start with, hi, how are you doing?
How are y'all?
Great, thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us. Daria, how about you start and maybe share a little bit about yourself and kind of how you found yourself being co-chair with Ruth?
Sure. So I am a mom to a 14-year-old son with pediatric feeding disorder, and ARFID still has his G-tube and has had it since he was a tiny baby. I've been involved with Feeding Matters for quite a while. I sort of had a lag time in the middle there where I didn't do a lot. But once I'd moved to Arizona, which I currently reside in, decided to get more involved. So I started out being a family coach for the Power of Two program, which I still am involved in. And then just saw the opportunity to apply to be a co-chair on this committee and just went for it. So it's been very rewarding.
Love it. Thank you. And Ruth, how about yourself?
I am a pediatric occupational therapist. And so I found myself in feeding therapy about 6 months after I started and realized I needed to learn more. But it wasn't until 2019 where I accidentally found Feeding Matters. I was looking for Feeding Flock, and I emailed the wrong feeding. And here I am several years later. I've been involved with, it used to be pre-conference, though, for several years. So back when it was pre-conference, I was on that committee. And then we've been the Summit for Change since, I think a couple years ago, 2 years ago, we changed.
Yeah, I think a few years ago. You're right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point for everybody to know. It used to be the pre-conference event.
Yeah. So it's a full day.
It wasn't wrong.
And you then know? we changed it to the Summit for Change. So I was there when we got to pick what the name was, and we all voted on what we wanted. So every year after, we've looked at what change we were looking for. And so this year was great. We got to add two conference chairs. And so I got partnered with the best. and we couldn't have asked for a better year.
Wonderful. And you both did such a phenomenal job with this year's summit. And the summit theme was feeding development beyond the growth chart, really just kind of as we continue to talk about how feeding development needs to be its own domain in early childhood. And I know you had a lot of people on, and we even had Alex on this podcast a few months ago to talk about it too. But one thing that I think is so special about how you both approached being co-chairs was it's a true partnership in having a co-chair. So it was parent and professional. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about how you guys approached that.
I just remember talking with Ruth and Athena, the three of us, and I was doing my usual complaining about how I always just feel such a disconnect between the parent and provider. And I was tired of filling out the forms. Yeah. I might have a few expletives here and there.
Yes.
I feel like I could be wrong, Ruth. Correct me wrong, but I feel like it sort of morphed out from that place of not that it was my idea, but just that it kind of like we started just talking all about that kind of topic and about those feelings about being a parent and having to deal with that. And just how, you know, taking your child to the doctor just became a very incredibly stressful situation, especially when they're babies and little and you're dealing with the growth chart. And you feel like nothing pertains to your situation. You know, like you're filling out these forms and I'm like, nope. Do you want me to attach 10 more pages? Because I probably could. It just, you know, just that yucky feeling. And then I feel like we kind of just built out from there.
And I think the feedback we got after last year's conference was that we wanted a dietary aspect on it. I think that was a very hot topic. Yeah. And so that's kind of where Alex came in the sense of we wanted someone to look at what else could we look at besides just those numbers. And then we had an idea and it kind of changed based on circumstances from our original panelists. Was unable to join us. And so we kind of got to expand from there and we got to add some other amazing speakers for sure. But we wanted someone that was a provider and a parent. And so that's such a unique experience for someone to have that specialty area, but then they have that lived experience. And I think they're both so valuable to look at that because it's your child, but you have all of this information in the back of your head too that you learned in school. But it's your child at the end of the day. And so how do you balance that? And so I think it's good for people to see that providers are struggling with the same things that non-provider parents are struggling with too. And so I think we kind of got to go and explore that topic so much.
Yeah, you really did. Because so for those that maybe haven't been to the summit, it's a multi-hour, fully live event, although it is available to be watched afterwards. It often is our most popular event in terms of the most people that are on live. And you all kind of hosted that for 3 hours live. We were joking before this that luckily this is pre-recorded. It's easy peasy compared to something live like you guys all did. How did you approach that in terms of you had lots of different panelists and you were really trying to shape an agenda that's shared over multiple hours?
It's a lot of endurance.
So I think we had a plan. We like practiced beforehand. We meet monthly as a committee. And so we had what we wanted. We had to pivot in January, I think, with new panelists. We got two new panelists. I think in January, we realized our original plan wasn't going to pan out the way that we hoped it was going to. And so we onboarded them pretty quickly, though. Like they were great to work with. And so we had the ideas of what topics we wanted to talk about based on what the committee talked about. And then they went above and beyond our expectations.
There was January. I'm sorry. January gave you how much time before the actual summit? For those who don't know,
I think it was a month or two, if that.
Not much time.
It wasn't.
Mm-hmm. They were so great, though. The panelists, though, that we ended up with, like they really just know what they're doing and know what they're talking about. So I didn't.
Right.
I feel like the transition was pretty smooth, and they were also willing and, you know, to participate fully. So
everyone handled it beautifully. Like you all did a very excellent job, and so did the panelists. I just want to point that out, that it all came together so well.
Yeah,
I think the goal was for no one to know that we had to pivot.
Yeah, right. I don't think people did. You let the secret out, Ruth.
I did. I'm not really good with a secret. Sorry.
No, it's all good. You got to be honest about the process for sure. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, Ruth, especially from you in terms of like how you got into feeding as a specialty, we've talked about that a lot, that like it is really challenging to, you kind of are like thrown in and have to direct your own learning. How did you approach that? And how did you carry that through being a chair of an event like this, where you know there are others who are just like yearning for that information? And like you said, professionals are in some of the same places of really needing a lot of information alongside families.
I think I got really lucky. There was other mentors at my facility that where I originally started. And then I immediately realized I needed more education. And so I'm someone that if I don't know something, I'm going to find the answer or find someone that does know the answer. So it's not what I know, it's who I know is what I say often. And how do I find those resources? And so I very quickly learned that parents are the experts in their children. And if I wanted to learn more about the children, I needed to listen to the parents. And so every class I took, I could pick up some skills to help the parents, but at the end of the day, if I wasn't listening to what the parent was going to do, I could ask them to jump from the moon. But if they can't jump from the moon, then why am I asking them to do that? There was a lot of trial and error. I look back at my first patients and I'm like, ooh, I could have done better. But I think as a new grad, that's okay. And I think you need to know how to, you need to be okay with doing better. You need to be okay with asking questions. And I think being someone that is someone open to always asking questions means other people can come and ask me questions. Like they see me asking questions all the time. And so can you come and ask me questions all the time? So I think being a good role model, and I think leading by example is huge. And I've always done that just in other ways. And so I think it just kind of carried on into what I was always doing. So does that make sense?
No, I mean, that's amazing. And Daria, I think from your perspective, you have probably interacted, and you shared with us in the summit too, of how many different providers you've interacted with. Ruth, I think, approaches working with parents in a very unique way in terms of like listening first, very approachable. Sure. Have you found the alternative to that? And, you know, how do you balance that as a parent and all the different professionals you have to interact with?
I think sometimes as a parent, it is hard. It's hard to be patient. And I can imagine as a provider, sometimes it's hard to be patient. So I guess I try to, especially when you're dealing with a real seasoned mom or dad that's like been there, done that. And then you start working with someone new. And sometimes it just feels like, oh my gosh, like who do you think you're talking to right now? And I just, that's frustrating. And I have to really dial myself down because that's what I have to remember to do, because I know they're most likely just doing their very, very best. But I tend to appreciate a provider that has a little bit more of that compassionate side, that bit more of that emotional side, and not just the clinical side, because I feel like especially with PFD and with ARFID, and especially dealing with an older child as well that has been dealing with this for their whole life, like it should be a different approach, I feel like, versus, you know, being the NICU and dealing with feeding problems in the NICU or even like a, you know, a 3 or 4 year old, like a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old is very different. And so I feel like the, you know, providers do need to take that into account. But I think for the most part, most of them are really, really, really trying their best, and it's a difficult area, you know, like I said, even especially when the kids get older, it becomes really hard. And because that child becomes more rare, I guess, you know, it's like when they're 12 months or under, or, you know, they're 12 months to say 3 or 4 years old, there's a kind of a protocol, I would say. And then once they start getting older, that protocol kind of has to goes out the window a little bit. So I think that the topic of, you know, the growth chart and how sometimes it doesn't pertain is kind of the same when it comes to feeding therapy and, you know, things like that. It's like sometimes things don't pertain, you know, and as a provider, you have to sort of look, be able to sort of dig in and look past all of that and say, okay, what does pertain in this particular situation and treat everyone as an individual.
You all talked about that in the summit, but it's something that we talk about here in the podcast a lot too, which is like how you see the individual beyond the field and needing to really customize your support for that family and what they need. And your example is a perfect one that like, I think we're so used to, you've got your infants and what you do for your infants and you've got your toddlers and what you do for your toddlers. And as that, as they age and as our kids age, that looks different and their feeding journey, their feeding therapy journey, all of it's going to change and evolve over time based on what they need.
So much so. Yeah, so much so. Mm-hmm. And the parents change too, I feel like, you know, especially when you've been doing it for so long and it's like, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think dealing with the parent, that has to be taken into account as well. For the most part, I've had pretty patient therapists.
Good. Good.
Yes.
So then in terms of how you approach this, you had like a major pivot. You are bringing a huge educational event to the Feeding Matters community, which is a really big community. How did you approach? I'm always so interested to know how you approached kind of like working together, because Haley and I have done this a lot. And we, you know, I think collaboration is something Feeding Matters does really well, but it's just something that we always want to try to model for others is like, how do you do something together, parent professional or even professional to professional? Like collaboration is everywhere. How did you two both approach like decision making, how you ran the committee, all of those things?
Ruth, you and I had zero issues. Like we had no problem.
I think loved working with Aria.
Athena is amazing. Like Athena was just the glue of the whole thing. And so there were some times I would email her and be like, is there anything I need to do? I feel like I need to be doing something. Did I miss something? And she's like, nope, you're good. And so I don't know. Did you feel like that, Ruth?
Can you explain for people what Athena does?
What's her title? I can't remember her title. She does everything. I don't know.
She does.
Yeah, it's amazing.
She's our program events manager. And then Athena really runs the conference and runs our psychology summit and a lot of our other educational webinars and events in our learning center.
Yeah, she just did. She was so organized with everything that I oftentimes felt like, wait, is there something else I'm supposed to be doing? And there wasn't, because it was just done. And
she makes it so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel I think this was my, I was trying to count, fourth or fifth year on the committee. And so every year you get
Ruth,
a different
you've been
group.
On the committee for a while.
I loved it. This is my favorite thing ever.
Good. And so, we love having you.
I told Athena I would only be the conference chair if that meant I couldn't leave the committee, if I could stay and just see. Because I was like, I just like sitting and seeing what everyone's doing. And so I think it was so much fun though, because Daria had never been to it. And so we were explaining how awesome this event was, but she didn't really get to see how awesome it was until the actual event. And then after was like, okay, probably everything they've been talking about now makes sense.
Yeah.
That it really is amazing. But we've gotten to see so many different changes over like the length of the conference. And then this year we did the in-person portion. And so that was a fun addition. And it was just fun to see it kind of change over the years. But this year I truly feel like it went very smoothly. And Daria was awesome to work with, because anytime we had a question, she was probably already asking it. Like she was just on top of it.
I was a little bit, but then I'm texting. I'm like, smiling.
But that helped us work out every kink and anything that could have gone wrong. You had already asked, like, because you needed help explaining some of the pieces of it and how the flow would go, but it helped make everything go smooth. It was your superpower.
Yeah, I'm like an experienced visual person. And so it all sometimes felt a little bit esoteric to me, like, because I was like, wait, I don't understand like how this goes. I was like, if this was in person, I feel like it would be a totally different mindset. I wouldn't really be asking all these questions, but because it was online, I felt like a little bit lost. But then then we just did it. And then now it's next year will be a lot easier in my brain, I guess, because now I've been through it. But
yeah, now you have something to like really picture in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you guys want for the future of the event? Or what have you already been kind of like brainstorming a little bit?
Yeah.
We what haven't thought yet. Yeah. I do. I have a thought.
So we're doing it right now publicly.
I think Ruth will probably have a lot to say on this just because since she's done so many, like she can have it like this comparison and I haven't been involved before. So for me, I'm like, wow, I thought that was great. Like I really enjoyed like the, unlike those watch parties, that was really cool. I just thought the energy, even though I was online, like it was virtual, I felt like I could feel there was a lot of energy there, which was exciting. I don't know. What do you think, Ruth?
So I feel like a theme that I've heard just like over and over again is the like word culture and like how feeding can look so different culturally. And in my head, I'm like, yes, finally, as a Cajun, feeding is so different. And so crawfish season is such a big deal. And everyone's like, ew. But how could we show, like, this is how my brain works. But everyone really enjoyed the year we did Days in the Lives. But how can we bring in different people's cultural experiences and how that is shaped throughout the different, like, throughout the country? So you're going to see different professionals. So like the GI doctor might see different things come up in my region versus your region based on cultural impacts. And so how can we make that into like a pretty bow of a cultural experience, but also highlighting like you can have different ways of eating culturally and like eating with your hands could be appropriate in some cultures. Yeah. Right. And like, eating by tube is totally fine too. Like, so what does like that can be like tubey culture can be a thing and we can like highlight the like awesomeness of that. Like you could still picnic. We had a presentation 2 years ago. They were from Australia. They did the tube picnics.
Yeah. The tube picnics from, Chris.
And I still think about that.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's my thought. It could be a crash and burn, but that's where I'm
at. I don't think it would be a crash and burn. Yeah, so I think we're leaving this in, but I'm just going to say this, that like if we are leaving it in, if you heard Ruth's idea, like they of course need to talk it through with their committee, but please let us know if you like that idea. I mean, this is an iterative community building process. So if you think that that's where we need to go, which I think all of us, you can't see our faces, but we were all so bought in to what Ruth was saying because it hasn't been something that we've addressed at an in-depth level before. and it does. Please share or even volunteer to be on the committee too because Ruth and Daria are going to go back to the committee and probably pitch this after it's been out on the podcast.
We did talk about that. Okay. Yeah.
I think the in-person portion could really highlight that because you're going to be in like with your peers of your community. So if you're in South Louisiana, you can do a crawfish boil because it'll be in February.
But when you have the watch parties, for sure.
Yeah, I thought the watch party thing was pretty cool.
A lot of people found a lot of success in them and community building in them. And I know that they've led to other things.
I had no idea that there would be that many people. Cause like I'm seeing like how many people had joined. Right. But then I'm thinking, well, wait, but then at this one watch party, there's like 40 people or something.
Yeah.
And I realized how many people actually were watching. It was a lot.
Mm-hmm. It was quite popular and it was, I think what was so funny, cause I did get to attend a watch party and, I live and die by the comment section of these live events because I like feel so strongly about our community and I love the passion and energy that comes from them. I also get so worried about it too. So it's like I go through an emotional roller coaster during any live Feeding Matters event, but I had so much FOMO cause I'm sitting there at a watch party. And I like love where I'm at, like in person with people watching this, but I like have the FOMO. I didn't have my computer. I should have just had my computer up. I didn't have my computer up to like type to my little comments section too. Well, that's very exciting. I think you guys have some great ideas to kick around as you plan for next year and some really meaningful conversations that happen. And that's what I think has been so great is that's a place for meaningful conversations to take place. And you did such a great job of like setting the table for that conversation to happen. You all talked a lot about feeding development. And, you know, Beyond the Growth Chart is kind of the system change initiative and all of that. What do you think the field needs in regards to feeding development? Or how do you like think about that as a as an idea? Any like thoughts or reflections on that, especially after the summit took place and now as we've been talking about it more?
Ruth, go ahead.
Sorry, you can see my brain. I'm you know me too well.
I know. I just wanted you to go really big. I just wanted you to go
I think
first.
It's such a big question. I think we keep on asking the same question, but I think listening to each other about what everyone needs, but collaboration. I don't think until we have collaboration more than just us, I think collaborating more so with the bigger community, that mm-hmm. way we can support parents better. Because I think a lot of people have whiplash back and forth. I think pediatricians don't know who to refer to. And I don't think OTs and PT or speech therapists are talking to each other about what we're doing. And if we worked together, instead of saying this is all in my scope of practice and this is all in my, if we worked together and sauced it out together, then I think we would make a lot more progress instead of saying this is mine, you can't have it. And I think differing opinions is okay, but I think it needs to be rooted in something that is actually substantial. And I don't think that that's where we're at right now. I think we're saying very different things with no concrete evidence.
Say lack of collaboration is probably in the top three issues, I would say, that I've dealt with as a parent over the years is the lack of that. We were lucky initially to have speech, OT, and PT at the same clinic. So that was a little, at that point, it was sort of like, and my son was really little. So it was like, that was just sort of like our everyday. We were just there. That was a little easier, but then once he got older and his needs changed and then it was just, and then we're dealing with GI and we're dealing with different doctors and therapists. It just, that would be one of my number one complaints, I think, is the lack of collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I agree with you, Ruth.
Yeah. And I think you make a good point too, Ruth, in the sense that I think a lot of our work up until this point has been like, how do we have like disciplines collaborate that are doing the feeding intervention? And there's still so much growth that needs to happen there to what you were talking about. But then it's like, if you zoom out from that, it's like, yeah, we've got to like, we need even more collaboration across like pediatricians and different specialties and all these other things too.
We're all really treating like the same child.
Right. Well, how do you feel that Beyond the Growth Chart initiative might help with that collaboration aspect at the system level? Do you think there's potential to improve things?
I think there's always potential to improve. I think we can always do better.
You're a hopeful person. I love it.
You have to be. I think I get told no more times in a day than the average person, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to keep on asking. If I know that that's what's best for the child, then I'm going to advocate for it, even if I'm told no. Because tomorrow's a new day. We can ask again.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because feeding we're seeing as a, you know, a developmental domain. And if it were being assessed consistently across disciplines, I think it could help with us all to be with being attended to more universally.
Oh, for sure.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I think, and I hope, I guess my hope in all of it is too that like it gets people thinking differently, that, you know, it, and maybe as we've tried to work on awareness and education on this issue and collaboration on this issue, it feels like we kind of keep trying to say some of the same things. And I think my hope is like, if we can be like, let's just tweak it all together and just like think about it as its own domain, like maybe it makes sense then if there's delays happening that we get on top of them and monitor them sooner. I think from my perspective, it's like a bit of a mindset shift. And then I think, Daria, what you always talk about in terms of like how the growth chart felt for you as a parent, like I think my hope too is that it changes the language around how you're receiving that as a family member too.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think like in hindsight, he was doing fine, but it didn't feel that way at the time. And I think I probably would have had a lot less stress and I would have put less stress on him if it had been explained to me in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because he's on the growth chart now, but like it took him a long time. He was always below it, but he followed his own curve. But it always was a concern. It was like failure to thrive. And it was, oh, well, we're only giving you that diagnosis to help you with insurance. And I'm like, huh? Like, you know, that could have helped me out a lot. Could have saved some stress early on, I think, and pressure early on for sure. Had that been communicated a little bit differently.
Yeah, because we take what they say at like face value and we're going to go do everything we can as like an overachieving
anymore.
Parent.
I don't anymore. But I could then.
As a seasoned parent.
Now I'm like, what are you talking about? No, I'm just kidding. but yes, we all, early, and plus you're a new parent and you're scared and you just, you know, every word that comes out of their mouth, you treat like it's, you know, gold really. And so it's all consuming for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the answer. It's a great question as far as like, how can we improve upon?
We just keep trying. I think that's the answer. The answer is we try one strategy and get as far as we can with that and then try something else. But that's truly why it does take all of us. And, you know, we're only able to do this summit because of both of you stepping up and saying, I am down to do this as a leader. And I, you know, have a great insight that I want to share and bring this community together for this educational event. And so for that, I'm really grateful to both of you for taking on that leadership role and really uniting the community in that way.
We're so grateful to you that this even exists, you know, so
we wouldn't be here without it. So
that's right.
Oh, thank you. Anything that you didn't get to share that you wanted to share?
I don't think so.
Nothing I can really think of. I mean,
I'm looking forward to next year.
You're going to be all ready to go for next year.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. It was really fun.
I'm excited.
I do. I am such an in-person person. The last year, I guess we were in person, right? And I just loved that. So I realize I understand the limitations with that, but
we are trying to figure out how do we get like more in-person things at like the community council level? And then how do we get more in-person things where the group can come together and like, what's the cadence of that makes sense? And so we're navigating it. So yeah, if you're listening to this and you do want to gather, there are opportunities, both kind of locally and then every once in a while when Feeding Matters does it all together. So I agree, Daria. It's like there's a space for in-person, but we also want to make sure there is still that space digitally too. So we're trying to balance it, but we just keep trying different strategies. So
I love it. I love it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Ruth. Thank you, Daria, for joining us. This was a very meaningful conversation, like the one that you were able to have so beautifully done at the Shannon Goldwater Summit for Change back in February for our conference, and we'll be doing again next year. Thanks for sharing and for all that you do. And thank you out there to those of you that are listening and are on this journey with us. Share with us your feedback on everything that we've talked about today. It definitely will impact the future stuff. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good one.
Bye.
Thanks all.
Bye.